He was an African composer and an author who grew up as a house slave in an aristocratic household in Greenwich, England. Working as a butler most of his early life, he flourished, reading voraciously, writing prose, poetry, and music. He was an avid theater goer and became a figure in fashionable London societies. Friendly with actors, painters, and the political being of his own nation. Charles Ignatius Sancho, 1729 to 1780, became the first black person to vote in Britain. Actor Patterson Joseph, star of stage, screen, and television, will portray the life of Charles Ignatius Sancho in a performance he has written and will be performing in. The production entitled Sancho, An Act of Remembrance, will play December 14th at 8 o'clock at the Williams Center for the Arts, Lafayette College in Easton. This is Lehigh Valley Arts Salon, WDIY 88.1 Allentown, and I remain George Miller, and along with my wife and co-host Kate Scuffle, we present to you this day a fascinating creation by Mr. Patterson Joseph, best known as Holy Wayne, in HBO's The Leftovers. Welcome.
Thank you very much.
Welcome, Patterson.
I wish I was playing Holly Wayne. Then that would increase my range.
Would it really?
I was going to say, I don't know about best known. It depends on Doctor Who fans. They might argue with you.
That's true.
Oh, yeah. A rather villainous character in the end of that first series with Chris, yes.
But also, we were talking a little bit before the show. You're also a Shakespearean actor, a classically trained stage actor. You've got some things in common with Charles Ignatius Sancho in many ways. How was it that you discovered him? I mean, and it was a discovery, wasn't it?
It certainly was. I mean, we're talking about only, I suppose, a decade ago, early 2000s. And as you said, I'm a classically trained actor. That's the phrase we use. Basically, right. What it means is you did a lot of Shakespeare at drama school. And I ended up doing a little stint at the Royal Shakespeare Company, a couple of years there, and a little bit at the National Theatre, and quite early in my career. I could get jobs, you know, in classic theatre plays easily, I think. But on television, it seemed impossible. I wasn't seen for any of the roles. I didn't really see any black people in any of the costume dramas set before the 1950s. And so I set out, really, as a sort of selfish actor does, to find a role for myself, a role that I could play that was an historical character, and I started researching. Mm. An African-American author called Gretchen Gertziner, who was an historian and writer, had written a book called Black England, and I found this book randomly. I think I literally just typed into Google Black England and up came this book straight away, thank God. And it was wonderful. And it started off in Roman Britain, would you believe? Mm-hmm. Went through the Elizabethan era. And then when it hit the 18th century, the 1700s, I turned over the page and found this portrait. It was in black and white of this Gainsborough painting of Charles Ignatius Sancho. And I couldn't believe my eyes. Mm. Because he didn't look like a slave. He certainly was a black man. There was no doubt about it. But this portrait was 1768. It's the height of the slave trade. How is this possible? And so began my interest in him as a character and how he came to be sitting for Gainsborough's portrait.
That's fascinating. And you found that that sense of the story being lost or of this kind of experience of that time in England for black England to be something that was not well known to audiences or to because we were talking a little bit earlier about, I asked if there was a difference when we were chatting between the reception with a British audience and an American audience to this story. And you said it was fairly similar because it was just also lost.
Yeah, it's lost. It's forgotten. I suppose that's why I called it an act of remembrance. Mm-hmm. I don't think that any of my family knew about Charles Ignatius or that there was a black England before a certain time in the mid-20th century. I certainly know that the people I spoke to in Oxford when I performed there, and this is, you know, it's the equivalent of an Ivy League town, you know. These are very smart people. And of the 270-odd people in the auditorium the first night that I performed in, I asked the question, only 10 people said that they knew anything about a black England before the mid-1950s. So it seems to me that there was a gap in my education, but there's also a gap in the general British education about that part of our history. Mm-hmm. In schools in the 70s, when I was going to school in the 80s, we were taught about the empire, which is, of course, was fading. But the empire took in a bit of Africa. It touched a little bit on the Caribbean, but it never really spoke about what was happening in England. Mm. And that's my interest, really, and that's how I became fascinated with him as a character.
But there is somewhat miscalculation of history, because some books tell us that he was born actually on a slave ship.
Yes.
In Africa, in Guinea. But yet his letters and his notes indicate that he believes he was born in Africa itself, on land.
Well, it's very difficult, because his biographer, the biographer of his letters, which were published 2 years after he died, Joseph Jekyll, had never met him. Mm-hmm. So we know that some of his accounts are simple slave narrative tropes. In other words, mm-hmm. there was always a suicidal father, there was nearly always an orphan, the struggle through slavery, and then maybe rising up out of it. So it's not clear whether Sancho's story as told by Joseph Jekyll is a true story or whether it's a bit of propaganda. Mm-hmm. Other historians, modern historians, have said that there's some truth in it, but not it's not verbatim, which leads a writer, with some freedoms, really, I suppose, to then extrapolate and find out what happened to other black people in that time, what happened to other working class people at that time, and then find a way of telling a story that's coherent. And I suppose that's what I've done. It isn't history as in, please come along to this and write your thesis on it. It is a story based on some facts that I have.
But there is solid evidence that he indeed was a composer of music, because there are works, right. And of course, of his writings.
Yes.
Not only his letters, but also his stories.
And it was a life he made, wasn't he? He used to earlier self-taught.
Yes.
I mean, and it wasn't, aside from that era kind of being lost, this extraordinary life. It would have been an extraordinary life no matter what, it seems.
Oh, yeah. I mean, you think about him walking down the street. He has this, I have cut it now from the play, unfortunately, mm-hmm. Quite rightly, maybe. But he's walking down the streets one day, and he passes this young man, a young fashionable, as he calls him, a fop, I suppose, somebody well-dressed, who then whispers to his companion, "Smoke, Othello." And Sancho steps into the guy's path, slaps himself on his massive belly, and says, "Aye, sir, such Othellos you meet with but once in a century, such Iagos as you we meet with in every dirty passage. Proceed, sir." And off the guy goes. And I think that is a wonderful piece of improvised wit that tells you everything you need to know about this guy.
That's amazing. And the Gainsborough portrait, how did that come? I mean, just because of, by that point in his life, he was that much a known figure in the society and the community. But that's just extraordinary.
Yeah, I think there's two pieces of vanity going on. I think there was one from Gainsborough, of course, because I don't think he'd painted very many black people prominently, prominent black people. So it would have been a very good portrait for him to have painted. Mm. But also, his boss, Sancho's boss, the Duke of Montague, was having his portrait taken. So it was painted. So it was also expedient for him to do this, to say, look how rich and how brilliant I am that I've got this incredible man as my valet. And here's a portrait of him. So there was a bit of vanity going on, but it works for everyone, including Sancho.
And to reduce it to its simplest, which is certainly to reduce it very much, the reason he was able to vote, the reason he was the man who voted, was because he ran a business.
Yeah.
That was the line that needed to be...
Oh, yeah. I mean, everybody in society was desperate for the vote. Very few people had it.
Yeah.
There's very few men who owned the right to vote. Mm. It was down your family line. It was an hereditary thing. You needed to be a property owner if you were going to break into that. And who could own a property in 18th century England? Not very many people. But when he became too ill to work for the Duke of Montague, he then was given an annuity, which is about £70, a lot of money in our terms. And he opened a grocery store in Mayfair in London. That made him a Westminster resident. It meant he could vote in that particular parliamentary election. So, it was because he was a property owner. Not, it wasn't to do with his race. It wasn't to do with anything else. And so, he won through because of that. Yeah,
that's fascinating.
Yeah,
And women could, am I correct? Women didn't vote.
No, no women. No women could vote. Even, I think it took until 1921 till they got the full vote, because they allowed women of a certain age to vote before that.
Okay.
But that you're talking about just before the First World War. It was the first vote for women, and then, you know, universal suffrage came in the 1920s.
And, of course, we know from history that he was married to an Anne Osborne.
Anne Osborne, the Jamaican wife, who used to appear as herself. I put a dress on and everything, and I'm sorry to disappoint the people, but that bit's been cut. Yes.
And six children.
And he had six children, yes. And unfortunately, three of them died before he did. Mm-hmm. So, that was very sad. But he never really talks about it. He's very stoical. He talks a little bit about it, but he never really goes on about it.
Mm-hmm. I'm intrigued by this individual myself, now that you've brought up these interesting points. Even as a shopkeeper, a grocery shopkeeper, how one can handle and juggle many things at one time, being a composer, being a writer, being a shop owner, and politically inclined as well.
Yes.
He didn't have to vote.
No, he didn't. But being in the shop and not able to move, really, because of his condition, it led him to write all these letters, this legion of letters that he wrote to the newspapers about all sorts of subjects, American independence, which he was totally against, the French Revolution, which he was petrified about. He was a true monarchist, though he's also anti-slavery. So he sat between two stools, really. But because of his ability as a butler, of course, to shop and know where to get the provisions, his shop was a wonderful emporium. People would come, the great and the good, to come and buy from him.
Interestingly enough, I hope I'm not giving away anything, but he had gout, just as Benjamin Franklin had, who survived very well.
A rich lifestyle, I think. I think he probably filled the Duke's cellar, but then took a couple of provisions himself.
Oh, I see.
That's right, I'd forgotten. He wouldn't have been, we think of voting differently now, he wouldn't have had to vote. He was that active and that involved and an activist, and would have been quite well known at the time. That's the irony, I would assume.
Yes, he would have been. He would have been, because there weren't that many black people doing what he did.
Right.
Even though there were in the region of between 12 and 20,000 black people in England at that time, mainly in the urban conurbations, but he certainly would have been a standout figure.
The communities, you mentioned it in another piece that I'd read in your research, talking about the frolics and the gatherings of that the black community in London and England at the time. The average person's lifestyle would have been more, would they have been in the country as slaves? I honestly am ignorant myself, for the most part at that point.
Yeah, it's an interesting, I think their status, their legal status would have been slave.
Okay.
But they could not be treated as such in the same way that they could in the colonies or in America at that point, at that time. So it was a very tricky thing. And it was another black lady, Dido Elizabeth Bell's great uncle, who was the Lord Chief Justice, who decided on a very famous case of runaway slaves, saying you could not be a slave on English soil. So it led to a lot of ambivalence about the slave condition.
Well, this is absolutely fascinating. We are talking with Patterson Joseph, the writer and the performer of Sancho, An Act of Remembrance, at Williams Center at Lafayette College, December 14th. Ignatius Sancho was better known, of course, for his profound philosophical letters and correspondence than his compositions in music. More on that after this message of regional interest.
This is Robert Siegel from NPR News. Every day, important things are happening all around the world, and it's our job at NPR to report about them to you. That means phone calls and tape recorders, microphones and satellites, sometimes plane tickets, and interpreters. It means we use our best editorial judgment, and we hope some humanity and humor, to explain the news that's happening today. It takes time, it takes commitment, and it takes money. Your contribution to public radio helps us bring the news of your world and your community to your radio every day, 7 days a week. So please make your pledge of support today at WDIY.org or by calling 610-758-8810.
We're back and we thank you. We are talking with Patterson Joseph, the writer and actor in performance of Sancho, An Act of Remembrance, which plays December 14th at 8 p.m. at the Williams Center for the Arts, Lafayette College East, and you all know where that is. And we want to say a very special thanks to Hollis Ashby, who was the director of the center, for setting this interview up, and with Tim Smith, who was the producer, who is the producer, not was, he still is.
I fired him. I don't like the look of it.
And, of course, we're talking about Sancho, An Act of Remembrance.
And just to remind folks, in case we get too caught up here, that it is the Williams Center at Lafayette College, williamscenter.lafayette.edu. Go to the website. You can get all the details. It is only one performance. It is Monday, December 14th at 8. One performance, and you don't want to miss it.
Yeah, it's a beautiful theater, too. I visited it today. It's 400 seats, but it looks half as big as that. It's so intimate.
It's well done.
Very well done.
And you're going to, you've been, we were talking a little bit earlier about audiences as well. This is the third or fourth performance in the States only?
Yeah. Although they've been stretched out. I was at the Kennedy Center last month, which was just obviously stunning, and I felt very privileged to be there. Mm. But what a response.
Really?
What a response.
You started with a children's matinee.
Oh, my God, yeah. I mean, I literally felt like, please, Lord, why are you doing this to me? Why are you testing me at this time? I was so vulnerable. It was the first time I was playing in America because it's 18th century language. Mm-hmm. I thought that might be tricky. Mm-hmm. And then it's children. I just felt like a condemned man going to his death. And I walked out there, and they were. It was like a zoo. And so much noise, so much movement. I was like, there's 300 people who really don't want to be here this morning. So I started into the play. And at one point, I might even add this now. I say, hi, I'm Patterson. And in my back of my mind, there was a voice saying, don't do that thing that you planned to do when you were in the bath a few mornings ago. But I did. I went, and what's your name? So I got 300 people going, rah! But it was a beautiful thing, because what it did was it made them realize, oh, we can make as much noise as we want. He doesn't really care. And so they were quiet for an hour and 10 minutes.
Brilliant.
Yeah, and they were really attentive. Great questions at the end, and really great reception. Yeah.
That's exciting. And you had you had children in mind as an audience when you wrote it? No, I wouldn't. I mean, I wouldn't. One thinks.
Yeah, you've got an age limit. So I was thinking about 14, just because the themes of some of the themes are quite dark.
Mm-hmm. Right.
There were some 9 and 10 year olds, much to my dismay, in the audience, but they also loved it. A 9 year old came back afterwards and said, I want to do a school project on this.
Mm.
Washington Kid. It was just beautiful. And I hope that means then that the play can be heard by a 9 year old and it can be heard by a 90 year old and it touches and speaks to that full range. You know, of people.
I was struck, you know, thinking Sancho, An Act of Remembrance. I think one of the things I love most about theater in my experience has been the times that something that you feel like you're carrying a spirit or a story, something, you give it life, you prevent it from being lost, you let a soul go free, you let something rest in peace, you heal, you make a circle. And I thought, I have to wonder for you, the making of this piece and the giving back of this story has to have been very potent an experience for you.
Yeah, I don't think I realized that, to be honest, Kate, until I got to Washington and I was walking around. I was walking around the Kennedy Center, as I'm feeling it now. And as we were walking past the Potomac and I looked up at this building and then I looked across the water and I saw the Lincoln Memorial and the Washington Memorial, I just suddenly thought, oh, Sancho would love this, his story being told. Mm-hmm. He speaks about this place and he's longing to come here. He wanted to come to America, but he never made it because he died. But here he is, and I've shed a tear, very actorly, I suppose, very emotional. But it just seemed to me that this was a beautiful full circle for him, just as you said. And yeah, it feels like his spirit comes with me. And it's very useful, you know. It's very useful for an immigrant to find another immigrant who has a story that is a success story. And I think that's why I love him so much, and I love to share him with people because, you know, America's a country of immigrants. But look at the achievements that all your immigrants have made. And Sancho's just like that. It's probably why I was fascinated by America, because he came from nothing, born on a slave ship, nothing, to achieve such greatness. And that was all by sheer optimism and his own innate intelligence and his hunger and his curiosity. And I think that is the immigrant story. It isn't, oh, you know, people who come just to suck a country dry. Most immigrants come to find something richer and to improve themselves and end up improving the land that they come to, mm-hmm. one way or another. So I love him for that, and I hope that the younger generation of black Britons, who sometimes worry about their own identity, are they British or are they somewhere from somewhere else, I hope it makes them realise that our story is beyond the mid-20th century and goes way, way back, gives them confidence.
And how does history, it's interesting, how does history become the story that we receive? We were laughing earlier. Do a few people sit in a back room and come up with a script?
Yes.
Is it human nature to focus on, I don't know, presidents and corporate heads? There's so many stories. We've had that experience with other authors and performers and artists that we've spoken with. We were talking earlier about Howard Zinn's work, which talks about the stories of Americans that are not in the traditional history books.
Mm-hmm.
It seems like this is a way of giving back a whole piece of history.
Yeah, yes. Certainly is the discovery of something that you didn't really know and realizing how ignorant we really
all
are.
Can be.
Yes.
And we were talking about the project just recently.
Lenny Godfrey was working on with the Tulsa, Oklahoma incident, Greenwood.
Yes, you told me a bit about that. That's fascinating to me, and I can't believe we don't know this story. Do your listeners, I presume?
It was a community, a part of Tulsa that in the, I think it was 1921, early 1920s, there was some provocation supposedly, and the Klan was very prevalent in the area. There was an African-American community doing quite well in Tulsa with the gold rush. There was an oil rush, forgive me, an oil rush. And for whatever reasons, one night, the white community literally started to bomb Greenwood from the air, from planes, and something like 36 hours, 46 city blocks burnt down, 3,000 people were dead.
Mm-hmm. And how did we not know
the
this?
The community was annihilated.
That discovery is mind-boggling.
It is.
And it wasn't that long ago.
No, I mean, this is genocide, and there's no film, there's no theater, there's no novel based on this. That sounds extraordinary to me. Well, maybe today that'll change.
And that's what Lenny was working on a piece. It's a play that they've got in development.
And so your discovery of Sancho
exactly.
is the same.
It's exactly the same.
Yes.
And what it does is it doesn't say, oh, you bad people, look what you did during slavery, because that's interesting up to a point. But actually, that's not what theatre's for. Theatre's really not to bash people over the head with a heavy stick. Theatre is to open people up, to make them see another point of view. And so there's entertainment in it. There is laughter in it, because that's Sancho's spirit. I didn't want to make him a modern activist, because that's not who he was.
Mm-hmm.
I wanted to make him a man of his time, and a man of his time is a man of wit, a man of great skill as a musician. Unfortunately, I have to sing, so I'm not a singer, as you'll find out when you come. But it's part of that whole let me entertain you, and at the same time, let me tell you something that you didn't know. And that's my story, and I think it's the best way to tell stories on stage.
And music, I noticed that you credit Ben Park with music. Are you working with Sancho's music? Music inspired by him? I mean, a mix?
All the music is Sancho's music.
Really?
Yes, and Ben has beautifully arranged them, but it's all authentic music from Sancho. It's one pity is that we cannot find his book on the theory of music. It can't be found anywhere. And he dedicated it to the Princess Royal, because he was at in the royal household, Princess Charlotte, and it would be a wonderful piece of memorabilia to have. So if anybody out there knows anybody who might have it, give it up. Be good to have it.
So this goes from now. You're going to Pittsburgh next.
We're going to the August Wilson Center.
Right.
And then we're going to the Brooklyn Academy of Music.
Oh, that's right.
Just
next
before Christmas. Yeah, 16th to the 20th, and then next year in February, to my utter amazement, the Chicago Shakespeare Festival.
Oh, wonderful.
Yeah, in February.
Absolutely wonderful.
So, full circle in a lot of it, back to Shakespeare and a costume drama and all the rest of it. The pictures I've seen, I'm looking forward to seeing the production, look beautifully staged and lit, and a kind of wonderful sense of the period even in that is so strongly evoked. It's quite beautiful just to look at.
And you know what's great about it, Kate, is that it's bare bones. I don't actually have a big set. There's not a lavish costume department as such. It literally, you see it build in front of you, and it's your imagination, not so much the costumes and the lights, but it's a beautiful thing to watch the audience get into it. Yeah.
Well, Patterson Joseph, we thank you so much for taking the time out of your busy day to come here
pleasure.
And talk with us at WDIY. It's Sancho, An Act of Remembrance, December the 14th at 8 p.m. at the Williams Center for the Arts, Lafayette College Easton. Make sure you get to see it. It is a profound piece, a wonderful, funny, witty, and glorious piece. So please, I wish we could have talked more about The Beach with Leonardo DiCaprio and Charlize Theron.
No, very, very uninteresting compared to Sancho.
Exactly, exactly. I'm so relieved we didn't.
Go read Hello Magazine if you want to know about those guys.
All right. Thank you much.
Thank you, guys.